Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
Well, good morning. It is 6:37 on WGN Radio, and I have in the studio with me, and I've been on the air here, I think, 19 years now, and I don't believe I've ever talked about this topic, but I don't want to talk alone. So feel free to call in if you so desire, 312-981-7200. You can text us, and I hope you do, at that same number. We're talking to a student. A veterinary student who is president of the Veterinary Student Association, Matt Holland. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Steve.
Well, it's my pleasure. And your story, I think, is an interesting one. You were saying right before the show, that's the building I used to work in. And when I met you at one of the veterinary conferences, I thought it was interesting that you were in television.
Yeah, I'm a second career student, and the first career was television production. I lived in Chicago for 6 years, in New York for a year, and I actually worked a couple blocks down the street.
And working in television, you said, I've had enough of this?
Well, I actually really enjoyed it.
What did you do?
I was a sports television producer, so I first got out of school and worked at the Big Ten Network in Chicago, and I, like I said, moved to New York to work at the MLB Network, and then came back to Chicago.
That's Major League Baseball.
Yeah. And then came back to Chicago and worked for the Chicago Bears for a few years. Throughout all that time, though, I spent my free time working with animals, which was much more fulfilling for me. I felt a lot more connected to the world around me and decided to make it a career instead of a hobby.
Yeah, but when you make something a career and you already have a career, and you're old at this point. How old were you?
20? I am old. Now I'm 30.
You're ancient. I know.
Yeah.
So what? You were at the time 26, 25 when you went back to school?
Yeah, I was 25 when I decided to go back. I was working full-time down the street in the Loop in Chicago and then taking classes up at Northwestern at Evanston.
So that takes some guts to say, I'm going to quit a job in broadcasting.
Yeah, probably more guts than brains.
Well, you know, having a job in broadcasting is the exception anyway. Because most people who go into broadcasting don't. They're unemployed. So you had a job in broadcasting doing essentially what you thought you wanted to do and said, I really don't want to do this, and I want to be a veterinarian.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. You stole the words out of my mouth.
But that's not cheap.
No. It's a long way from that. So the average debt that veterinary students come out of school with now is upwards of $150,000.
I don't think people know that, you know. So you go to veterinary school, you choose to go, or at least accepted at the University of Illinois at Champaign. That's the other thing. It's easier to get into medical school than it is to get into veterinary school.
It is, yeah. I mean, because there are so few veterinary schools, we have the student AVMA represents 36 chapters, to give you an idea, and there's how many hundreds of medical schools. So it's a very competitive process, and That also leads into the other thing that I wanted to talk about today, which was the wellness and mental health challenges that face our students.
Well, surprisingly, so think about this, friends. The profession, whatever profession that is, where there would be the most suicides. And one might think plumbers, because every day your job goes down the drain. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you would think would be a profession that there would be the most suicides in.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard dentists before, too.
Yeah, dentists are high.
But here's the thing with veterinarians is that, you know, we see in our day-to-day lives the humane end to life. We see animals dying day in and day out, and we also practice humane euthanasia. And so it's not necessarily that we consider suicide more than other professions, but we're much more successful when we attempt because we have access to these drugs.
Oh, you think that's it?
That's it. It's part of it.
Yeah. Do you think veterinarians and veterinary professionals, I want to put technicians in there too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Do you think the depression rate is higher?
Yeah, it is higher.
Why?
Unfortunately.
Why?
Well, you know, so it starts in school right now. Similar to med school, we're under intense academic pressure.
It's the academic pressure, and you mentioned the financial pressure.
That's a piece that's very much related. So the average veterinary student is an extremely high performer coming into veterinary school, and we've never had to study all day, every day to keep up the kind of grades that we're used to before we get there. So then we start to consider sacrificing our basic needs like sleeping, eating, exercising, maintaining healthy personal relationships. And when we start to try to fit all of those things in, our grades drop and it feels like we can't do anything right. We feel like we're failures and we feel very lonely because of all of this. And then when you get out and move into the profession, because of the debt that we're facing, we have to work 60, 70 hour weeks just to maintain the minimum payment. And, you know, in the meantime, we are seeing these animals die every day, like I just mentioned. And we try not to let on to that to our clients and our patients, because that's modeled to us in the system that we're in. It's even modeled to us by the animals, because animals don't show pain until they're in extreme pain.
Yeah.
So we try to follow that lead and just grin and bear it, and we can't always handle it.
Yeah. Well put, and I think surprising for a lot of people to hear, actually, because you wouldn't think of veterinarians. But I think one big piece of that, I have a good friend whose dog just passed away, and we were talking about how the process went and how the veterinarian handled it, which was, you know, wonderful. And imagine going through that every single day. So every single day, you're dealing with death. You're dealing with a distraught family. Pets are members of the family, if we're talking about companion animals. And kids involved, too, often. It's heartbreaking.
Absolutely.
You know, even if it's an 18-year-old dog.
Yeah.
It's a member of the family they've lost. And sometimes it's not. So sometimes it's a dog that, as a medical professional, you're treating, or a cat, and you're hoping things turn around. But you don't have control over cancer.
No.
You don't have control over some of these diseases. You do the best you can.
You don't have control over whether or not your client can afford to keep up medical care for their family member, for their pet.
So, is guilt a part of it too?
Absolutely. Huge part.
I wish I could have done more. I think I could have done more.
Yeah. What if I would have paid for the treatment myself? What if I would have tried a different treatment? And we take these feelings back into the back of the hospital, and then we do it over and over and over again all day, every day, and it adds up.
Yeah, yeah. On the other hand, because I don't want to leave us depressed here either, it is a fulfilling profession, and I want to talk about what your role is today and what you seek to do in the world of veterinary medicine. It's kind of interesting. Matt Holland is our guest, 16 minutes before 7 o'clock. WGN, where you can reach us at 312-981-7200. You can call, you could text, you could ride your bicycle over. I'll talk to you. It doesn't really matter. Matt Holland is the president of the Veterinary Student Association, a student at the University of Illinois School of Veterinary Medicine. What year are you in, Matt?
My fourth and final year.
You say that with a smile on your face.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to start the next chapter.
Has it been tough for you? You're a good student, I imagine. I have that sense. Has it been hard?
It depends on your definition of good. It has been very difficult, yeah, and also very rewarding and fulfilling.
How many veterinary students are there in America? Do you have any idea?
I know our association has 15,000 members, and we generally run around 90% membership. So.
Yeah, so nearly 20,000 students,
yeah,
somewhere in there.
Rough estimate, yeah.
And you're the president.
That's right.
Of all those people.
Somehow.
So why did you decide to go into a leadership role?
Well,
I assume they didn't force you to be the president.
they didn't. The first year we got an email and it was, do you want to represent your class to all the other veterinary classes? And I was like, sure, that sounds great. Because I had this former career in media, and I was like, I think I have some communication skills. I could write some emails to my class, and then got more involved and kept doing more and more things on that path. And here I am today.
And what do you ultimately want to do in veterinary medicine?
Well, I know that I'm prone to changing my mind, as we've already talked about, but I want to start working in policy and legislation and advocacy.
So when one thinks about a veterinarian, one thinks about appropriately, someone who helps our dogs and cats. But there are veterinarians that work at zoos. There are veterinarians that work in the field with wildlife. There are veterinarians that protect our food.
That's right.
Food safety. That's a role which most people don't know. So when you have breakfast this morning, thank a veterinarian.
Yeah, we have researchers, teachers. We work very closely with human medicine as well.
Not closely enough.
I don't know.
I want to see more comparative medicine.
We're working on that too. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but the person who discovered the West Nile virus outbreak when it first came in the 90s in New York was a veterinarian.
That's right.
And how much has that affected humans?
Yeah, absolutely. And historically, to study things like cancer, veterinarians and others have been using human researchers. Human researchers have been using rodent models.
Yeah, yeah.
Going back forever.
The models for human medicine are always animals first.
Yeah.
You can't use medicine treatment on humans until they pass animal tests.
But my problem with that is dogs get these, for the most part, get all the same cancers anyway. And dogs live in the same environment we do, quite literally. Why study rodents? You're inducing cancer. It's not something they get naturally. You have an animal that lives maybe a couple of years. Anyway, that's a healthy rodent, depending on the kind of rodent we're using. And now we've got induced cancer, so that rodent may live weeks or months. How can you study that? And instead, dogs get fill in the blank, name the cancer. They get most of them, unfortunately, most of them anyway that we get. And in fact, that's happening. So one example is bone cancer, which is in people more common in children. So as a result of research that's been done on bone cancer in dogs, generally larger dogs that get it, we are now helping kids. And there are many examples of that, and that list is growing. We need to see more of that, in my opinion.
You're right. When you say that animals share the health conditions that humans do, they are almost all the same. There's zoonotic diseases all over the place.
That means
that it can spread between humans and animals. And we're talking about, like West Nile, like I mentioned earlier, Ebola, Zika. I don't know if you've been following the news with that, but the veterinary medical profession and human medical profession are more intertwined than most people understand, I think.
Yeah, and I think need to be more intertwined, in my personal opinion. So what do you want to do? So when you're out of school, which is any minute, what do you want to do?
Oh, it'll be another year. When I'm out of school, I hope to go be the voice for our profession in the lawmaking process and the legislative process. I have found through the leadership experience so far that, of course I went to vet school because I love animals. I also happen to really like people. And so if I can facilitate the people who help animals, if I can help them, that makes me feel really good. So I'm helping animals indirectly through helping the people that help animals.
Are you talking about mostly legislation?
Legislation's part of it. Advocacy is another big part. Coming here and being here and talking to the public is another big part of that.
Yes, and I've got texts to get to, and I'm going to try to get to some of those.
Sure, sure.
In a moment. You want to hear about the highest quality, most effective, natural, and organic products for your lawn?
I've been waiting to ask you this.
I knew that.
Yeah.
So check this out. Espoma, the original organic since 1929, before your time.
A little.
Yeah,
I am old now, though.
Yeah, you said you're 30?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I think we're back. I'm looking at the text here, a ton of text about trap, neuter, return of stray or community cats. And the reason for all of those texts, Matt Holland, is because there was a story today, I believe. I saw sort of a preview of this in the Chicago Tribune by John Cass criticizing the TNR programs. And I'm going to call Mr. Cassie if he wants to come on the radio next week to talk about that, because, some of what he said in those columns is just simply wrong, and I would love to have a conversation with him about that.
That's a very controversial issue.
Yeah, but it really isn't. So People have tried for eons, hundreds of thousands of years, to get rid of these cats. They've tried to poison them. They've tried to shoot them. They've tried all these things, and nothing has worked. TNR kind of does work, because if you make it impossible for them to reproduce by spaying and neutering the cats, eventually their population declines. Does it work overnight? No. But does it work? Yes. It truly does. And the whole thing about killing birds, yes, cats will if they can, but it's overdone. And when cats are TNR'd and they have caretakers watching over them, then they're supplemented with food. And while they still might kill some birds, they don't want to work that hard.
Yeah, I think what you were saying earlier is spot on. It can work. It is sometimes, in some cases, very difficult to make it work.
How? Why?
Because there is research that shows that cat colonies are not affected by TNR.
When people dump additional cats there, they're not. But that's the only way they're not. But if it's done right, yes, it does work.